What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Pardon My Mental podcast. I am your host, JX Savage, aka Jackie. First of all, thank you guys so much for being extremely patient and extremely supportive during the hiatus. It was just a week, but I can't lie. It kind of felt like I was away from you guys for like a super long time. I felt like a month, but it was just a week. So thank you guys so much for being patient during the hiatus. You know, I had so much that I had to, you know, get taken care of, plus kind of regroup from, you know, so many of the things that I was going through at the time. So I appreciate you guys for being patient. I also want to kind of slide an idea by you guys. Well, first of all, before I slide that idea by you guys, first of all, welcome to everyone who is new to the podcast. I did a little bit of work with Facebook recently to try to get, you know, an ad out there for the podcast on Facebook, and the like count went up, the listen count went up. A lot of people listened, and I had a few more people kind of reach out to me and say that they felt like the podcast was helpful to them, especially the episodes that they had heard so far. So thank you guys for all the kind words. Thank you guys for also hitting like on the Facebook page. I really, really appreciate it. Hopefully the ad has helped out a little bit in reaching out to people. I'm kind of learning it, you know, with the whole Facebook and Google Analytics. It's all new, and it's all really comes down to a strategy that you can have to kind of promote yourself. You know, I want to promote my podcast, but at the same time, I want to make sure that I'm helping people along the way of promoting it. I don't want the promotion to seem like, oh, pick me, kind of. You know what I'm saying? I want it to stay authentic to the original goal and the original mission of the podcast, which is to kind of just help people, give people, you know, a little bit of insight into others that experience the same things that they experience or are experiencing, and just to make sure that we continue allowing it to be a safe space for people. I know when it comes to talking about mental health and dealing with it, it can be a bit much for people, and I don't want to lose the original reason why I started this podcast. So just kind of testing out the ad a little bit, seeing how it works, and you know, so far so good. Haven't really come across anything too weird, but just gonna continue working at it. I just continue asking for patience and continue asking for ideas. I know one of the things that I'm kind of looking into is possibly, you know, equipment, maybe, you know, having a venue space other than my apartment. I have a lot of things that are changing, and I'm probably going to end up needing that venue to have the podcast, and maybe even ask for some people to kind of be guests on the podcast. I had some people reach out to me this first season, and I was 100% here for it, but the more that I thought about it, I was like, well, this is kind of introductory. I want for people to kind of get to know me first as a host and kind of understand my outlook and understand, you know, how I think and deal with certain things before I start adding other people into the mix. So when we finally finish season one, now, you know, I have two more episodes left technically of season one. When we finally come to an end with that, I'm definitely going to reach out to some people and say, hey, I have this awesome podcast. I'm coming up, you know, with these ideas for new episodes. I think you would be really great. Are you interested? You know, and I also have to throw out there the fact that none of this is paid. It's kind of just doing the good out of your own heart, and I want people to be willing to be good and use their heart and say, hey, yeah, I'm willing to help someone. You know, not everything has to be a money grab, and you know, it's a startup podcast. You know, I'm not doing anything with anyone's money or time other than my own, and I'm not rich by any means. So I'm really trying to figure some things out here, and I really hope that you guys stick around and stick with me and you know, are really willing to go onto this journey with me. You know, and also, speaking of having two episodes left, I kind of want to have three episodes left. Two of those episodes will be, per usual, our normal kind of serious conversation about mental health and different scenarios. But I do want for one of those episodes to kind of be fun. You know, no one wants to really deal with, you know, sadness all the time and depression. It can be a bit much sometimes. You know, even if you're the person who suffers, it can be a bit much for you. And I do want to be able to have at least one or two episodes per season where we can kind of just laugh and shits and giggles and talk about pop culture and things like that, because even though I'm an advocate for mental health for Black and Brown people of all ages, but I am someone who loves music. As you guys know, I give you a different song every episode that relates to that episode, and so far you guys have seen that my taste is pretty vast out there. But I want to talk about pop culture, I want to talk about music, I want to talk about the things that I really love to talk about. And the reason why I want to do that is because when you do something that you love, that helps with your mental health a lot. And one of the things that I love is I have so much knowledge that's pointless and useless, not just for, you know, things that have to do with science or for like random history facts or random Black history facts. You know, I have random facts about, you know, different musics and different types of music and different genres and how this song had this producer and that song has that producer. Like, for instance, my girlfriend, we were in a car, I can't remember where we were driving, and Disturbia by Rihanna came on. Shout out to Rihanna. Those people who knows me know that I am in love and obsessed with that woman. But Disturbia by Rihanna came on, and we were singing a song and we were enjoying it, and the song went off and she was just like, damn, baby, that's a really good song, you know, I hadn't heard it in a long time. And I was like, yeah, a lot of people don't know that Chris Brown wrote that song. And she had no idea. She was like, wait, why would you know that? Well, I'm the type of person, I come from a very musical family. We've had ties to people in the industry for years. And one of the things that I have the tendency to do is I tend to look at the music notes, the art notes, the CD notes, you know, when CDs were really a thing. You can go on Spotify and you can look up those notes now, but I like to see who produced it, who was the engineer, who was the writer, who was the writing team. I like to look into that kind of thing, and I remember reading that Chris Brown was one of, it was like three writers on that song Disturbia, and Chris Brown was one of those writers on that song. And I remember finding that out, I was like, dang, like he's super talented. And so with time and learning all these things, I can listen to a particular song and know who wrote it and who produced it, because every producer and songwriter has their own unique style. Like, for instance, you know a Ne-Yo record when you hear it. You know it by the lyrics, you know it by the beat, a little small hi-hat, a little bit of an 808, you know a Kanye beat when you hear it, you know a Teddy Riley beat if you hear it, like you know a Dark Child when you hear it, you know a Candy Burris if you hear it. And that's the kind of person that I am. That's the kind of lover of music that I am. I like looking into those little notes. So I really want to do that, you know, an episode like that, because I think that that's super dope. I think that it has a little bit of positivity. You guys kind of get to know me a little bit. We get to talk about something that's off the realm of mental health, but also having an episode that's at least fun and exciting to listen to and kind of get your mind off of things. You know, sometimes sometimes we tend to listen to certain things and our mind is just like, oh, you know, and then we start to think. And although I do want us to think and I do want us to have a really good experience and everything else with this podcast, I do want to be able to exhibit a little bit of fun. So that's just something that I'm thinking about doing. I'm probably, if anything, it'll probably be the very last episode going into the very next season. So yeah, I'm super excited about that. I also want to do a quick shout out. So as you guys may have noticed over the last few episodes, football season is back. Football is one of my favorite sports of all time. If you live in the South, you automatically are into football. Like, that's just our thing in the South, whether it's high school football, college football, or professional football. We take all kinds of football very seriously. And living in Dallas, Texas, I'm one of the odd men out here out here because I'm from Louisiana and I represent my home team very well. I represent the New Orleans Saints very well, very tough. I'm all the way behind my team 100%. And although the Cowboys and the Saints are not technically rivals, I mean, they're rivals in terms of the conference, but they're not rivals in terms of the division. Dallas Cowboys are NFC East, and the Saints are NFC South. And so the Cowboys aren't necessarily our rivals, but what makes it so much fun and makes it so intense is there was a time way, way back in the day, a lot of people don't know this, but there was a time way, way back in the day where in Northeast, in the northern part of Louisiana, we could not get any Saints games. We could only get Cowboys games. And we could only view those games because, just a random fact, I used to work at Dish Network. And a lot of these cable companies or satellite companies have contracts with different smaller companies. Even when it comes to, like, we'll just say Fox Net, you know, Fox Sports or something like that, they have contracts with these sporting leagues, with these professional sport leagues. They have contracts. And if they can't come to an agreement in these contracts, then the games are blacked out for these particular areas. Not all areas, but for the most part, for particular areas. And if they come to an agreement, then guess what? You can view the game. For a really long time, we could not see any Saints games because of that reason when it came to contract negotiations and do you really want to spend this much money? Well, would it make sense to spend this much money because they're closer to the Dallas area than they are to New Orleans? Which is insane to me because New Orleans is in the state of Louisiana. You know, contrary to what people like to believe, New Orleans is not a state. New Orleans is a city. And no, New Orleans is not the capital of Louisiana. Baton Rouge is, although New Orleans at one point back in like the 1800s, I want to say, was once upon a time the capital of Louisiana, but it no longer is. I say all of that to say it is fucking stupid for us to have been unable to watch Saints games because they felt like we would have been more interested in Dallas, which is why we have this split down the middle in the northern part of Louisiana, because we do have people who grew up watching the Cowboys games, and so they're still Cowboys fans. And then you have people who have always been Saints fans, and they've made it a point to go to Saints games, travel 4 hours north to south of Louisiana to go to a Saints game that was at home. So, you know, my family, we're split right down the middle. We're half Cowboys, half Saints. There's no ifs, ands, ands, or buts. It's just this or that. I don't think that there's anyone in our family that are just like, oh, I'm a Green Bay fan. Maybe one, but, you know, other than that, we're pretty straightforward and either you're a Cowboys fan or you're a Saints fan. And on leading up to Sunday night's game, Saints fans were trolled. The Saints organization was trolled by Cowboys fans and by the team were trolled because they were undefeated. They were 3-0 at the time because they won all three games by, you know, against three of the league's worst teams. So I guess that's a, you know, a win is a win that we like to say, you know, unless, you know, you're feeling some type of way. But either way, they were undefeated. And they felt really confident. I mean, if I was undefeated, I feel really confident as well. And, you know, regardless if the teams that I beat were trash to begin with, I would still be pretty confident. So they trolled us the whole week. Great. Some of us talk crap back. I was one of those people that talked my shit. I'm going to talk my shit. Win or lose, I'm still going to talk shit about your team. You know, and Saturday night, leading up to Sunday night's game, there was a video that started circulating around on the internet of Cowboys fans doing a second line down Bourbon Street in New Orleans. Now, if you're familiar with New Orleans and the culture of New Orleans, you know what a second line is. But they did a second line down Bourbon Street and saying that they were taking over Bourbon Street. It was now officially New Orleans, Texas. Like, that's what it was called now. And this and that and the third. And the musicians were terrible. And it was just, the way that they trolled was insane. And to make a long story short, we won that game. And what makes it so funny is we won the game with no touchdowns, field goals only, and they had an actual touchdown. Now, true enough, you have some fans, Cowboys fans out there that'll say, well, you guys only did, you know, field goals and this and that and the third. Yes, which should make you feel like shit because you got beat by our kicker and by our defense, essentially. So there was really no excuse for the Cowboys to have lost that game. The referees threw bullshit-ass penalties to both teams. So we can't sit here and say that, you know, this team was cheated, that team was cheated. I mean, of course, Cowboys fans are going to say that they were cheated because they lost the game, but there were equally as bad flags on both sides, and we won the game, and people knew that I was going to just talk my shit after we won. I talked my shit before the game. I talked my shit during the game. And I can bet your bottom dollar my black ass trolled them all day long yesterday. Trolled all day. So, shout out to the New Orleans Saints for bringing their A game. You know, we're still trying to, I know they're still trying to figure out how to win without Drew Brees, you know, and I feel like that's something we should have discussed a long time ago as an organization, because Drew is 40 years old, which means that he's old for not only just a quarterback, but just an athlete, period. He is an old guy, and Drew isn't going to always be there, and so we need to start thinking about life without Drew, and I think that we're being tested in that right now, because we have Teddy Bridgewater and we have Taysom Hill, and we have to be able to bring our quarterbacks to at least be half the caliber of a player as a Drew Brees is, who is the greatest quarterback in the league right now, and unfortunately he's just injured. So shout out to the New Orleans Saints for shutting up the Cowboys and shutting up the Cowboys fans. There was nothing sweeter then going through that and giving them the L that they so terribly deserved. Also, before we get into coping mechanisms, I do want to say that I know that I opened up to you guys recently and discussed how I had been laid off from my job in May. And I am here to announce that I finally have a job. I have two job offers, actually. I have one job offer that actually starts next Monday, and I have another job offer that starts the following Monday. So if you've been sending great vibes, prayers, you know, all kinds of things into the universe for me, I, on my behalf, I am so grateful for you guys, because it was getting really tough for me. I thought I was going to get evicted. At one point, I thought I was going to lose my car. I did not know how I was going to be able to make ends meet, because severance packages don't last long. And I definitely had a severance package that ran out. And I was really considering pulling from my retirement and having to just deal with the penalties during tax season. And I'm really grateful that I have family members that have been super supportive and understanding and sending what they can to kind of help me out. You know, my Aunt Natalie, my Uncle Reese, my mom, who's super duper amazing, my dad doing what he could whenever he could, my girlfriend stepping up to the plate and trying to make sure that I was at least taken care of. You guys, my friend Laura Malonsky, she's been amazing. Who else? Denise, she's been amazing. Just everybody. I 100% appreciate you guys, because the money that you sent, you didn't have to. And the fact that you guys love me enough to know that I would do the same thing for you, which is fact. If y'all need it, you're gonna get it from me if I have it. And you guys know that, because we've helped each other out like that before. And I couldn't ask for a better family member. Oh, my cousin Raw, he's helped. My cousin Dickie has helped. I'm appreciative. I'm super duper appreciative. And even though I'm still a little bit in a tough spot financially, you know, trying to figure some things out until I get my first paycheck, I know that I'm going to be okay. I know I'm going to be good. And I appreciate you guys for helping me out, for sending prayers and loves and encouraging messages to me. My aunt Anita. She was phenomenal in helping. I'm really appreciative of you guys. I love y'all so much. I couldn't ask for a better team, a better squad, a better support system. I couldn't ask for a better girlfriend. You guys have no idea how much I love this woman. She is she's absolutely amazing. I'm not going to get emotional, but I couldn't ask for a better girlfriend to have been there for me during this time. And I hope that I show her every single day how much I love her and how much I appreciate her. So thank you guys so much. I can't wait to start my job. I can't wait to let you guys know how well it's going. And yeah, I'm super duper happy. Now, I know people are probably like, hey, how's that going to affect the podcast? Not to worry. I'm going to do my damnedest to make sure that we can still do the podcast. I'm going to figure out everything as soon as I get a groove into it. And you guys will remain updated, of course, per usual. You guys are going to remain updated. And I cannot wait. I'm so excited. I'm excited about finally getting out of this hump, especially in time for the holidays and with all the things that I have, you know, planned, you know, as far as like I'm trying to look for a house, because I definitely need a bigger space at this point. I have so much, you know, in my life now that has changed over the last few months, and I'm running out of space. And so I know that I can no longer be in an apartment. I've kind of outgrown it, and I'm trying to live a different life now and build a different life and hopefully have kids one day. And so I have a lot that I have planned, and I know that the universe and that God has my back, and it's all going to work out the way that it should. So I'm super duper excited. All right, so coping mechanisms. This is what happens when I haven't talked to you guys in like a week. I'm long-winded and I'm excited to share shit with y'all. Coping mechanisms. One of the things that I do as a coping mechanism is deep breathing. Sounds kind of cliche. I know people say count to 10, blah, 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 woo-saw. And it's cliche, but it works. You know, we might not like the fact that it's cliche, but if it works, then, you know, utilize it. Because when you take a deep breath and you kind of zone in a little bit, you have no choice but to become one with what's on the inside of you and ignore the noise that's outside. And when you take a deep breath, it helps kind of calm you down. It lowers your blood pressure. You can kind of hear your heart. And if it's beating too fast, you can kind of slow your heartbeat down a little bit to a BPM that's, you know, a reasonable BPM, which is beats per minute. So basically when you do a little deep breathing, you kind of just breathe in for 5 seconds, hold the breath for 3 seconds, and then breathe out for 7 seconds. I feel like if you do that repeatedly, maybe 5 or 6 times, I think, it'll get you into a really good space. And it'll get you back to a more calmer space, whether you're angry, whether you're experiencing a little bit of anxiety or anything like that. It definitely gets you to what you need. Another thing that I do is a hot, warm bath. I don't think I've ever told you guys this, but one of the things I normally do after, when I had a job, what I would do after work, if it was a very, very stressful day, because my last job was kind of stressful, I would draw myself a warm or a hot bath. And I would put like some lavender. Lavender oil is a really big thing, but you can put lavender and rosemary in there, or lavender and orange. As long as you have lavender oil in there, you're fine. And you just kind of sit in there, maybe put some bubbles in there if you'd like. Kind of relax, sit back, close your eyes, and just relax. And lavender is such a calm and cool and soothing essential oil that it can calm the most angry person down, to be honest. You can do that in a bath. You can put that in your diffuser if you like. But that's what I normally did when I was stressed out or I had a little bit of anxiety, because you don't want to go to bed with that on your heart. Like I said, I come from a religious family, and there's a saying in the Bible that says do not let the sun go down on your wrath, which basically means don't go to bed angry. Whether you had an argument with your partner or you're mad about something or you're stressed out about something, don't go to bed like that. Try to get yourself calm, get your mind cleared, and you'll have a more peaceful sleep at night. I am a believer that sometimes when we go to bed with a certain energy in our on our minds and in our hearts, we tend to not sleep very well. Number one, you toss and turn, you might have a nightmare, you know, whatever the case may be, and you're just gonna wake up mad as hell the very next day. And so doing that helped me out a lot. So breathing exercises and having a lavender bath are the two things that you can use as your coping mechanisms that I am a firm believer actually works. So for this week, this week's episode is called hashtag us versus them, which that is basically being Black in America. This is an episode I knew that I did not want to dodge. I knew I did not want to dodge it because of the times that we're in. My podcast isn't big enough for propaganda or anything like that, or to say, well, this is just the media. No, this is me being honest and being real, because I'm a Black woman in America. Hell, I'm a Black gay woman in America. And so I really wanted to touch upon this. And what's crazy about me talking about this episode today is that the Botham Jean trial was today. And they found Amber Geiger guilty of murder, which is what she deserved. And I know that we see that as a win in the Black community, but we also have to keep in mind that, yes, that is a win, but we still need for sentencing to be fair. We need for the sentencing to be justice. If she were to get 3 years in prison, that's not justice, because everything that she did, everything that the Dallas Police Department did, was foul. And that's just saying it for what it is. Everything that that she did and that they did was 100% foul. So what we really want is we want to make sure that not only do we get the conviction that is needed, we also want to get the sentencing that is needed and that is rightfully deserved. And so I think right now, I haven't seen anything about what the sentence is going to be. I know that we were waiting on sentencing that was supposed to happen today. I haven't heard anything. Hopefully we hear something before the day is over. But yeah, it's crazy how I'm doing this episode and the Botham Jean trial was today and she was found guilty. And like I say, even though in convictions, that's a win, but in sentencing, we need a win as well. 3 years is not a win. 5 years is not a win. She needs to at least have life with the possibility of parole. I do think that she should at least have the possibility of parole, but I'm okay without parole as well. So, yeah, I do think that the sentencing is a win, and whatever civil trial that Botham Jean's family, I hope, and I apologize to his family if I'm butchering his name, I apologize, but hopefully whatever civil suit that they decide to file with, you know, against the Dallas Police Department, I hope it all goes amazingly well, because someone was taken from them in the most senseless way possible, and the police department tried to cover it up, knowing that what Amber did was wrong. So I just want to send my love and condolences and hugs to his family. I hate that they're going through this. I hate that they're having to relive it. I cannot even begin to imagine the things that they're going through, but I send my condolences and my love to his family. So, as usual, we have a reference track. I have a reference track for every single episode for those who are new. I usually have a reference track for every single episode. And with this one, I thought it was perfect to use Michael Jackson's They Don't Care About Us record as a reference track. That song was released in 1995 on his album History, Past, Present, and Future, Book 1. And that was the video. Both, he had two different videos for this song, and there's actually two different versions of this song that are super controversial. The song itself is controversial because of the terminology that he uses, and because it's so hard hitting and so in your face. People can feel how they feel about Michael Jackson, but I always appreciated him for addressing, you know, black issues and just people of color issues, period, in this record, because a lot of people, you know, especially after he took all the pigmentation out of his skin so he wouldn't be blotchy due to the vitiligo, a lot of people felt like he was trying to be white, that he was no longer in touch with his black side. And not to say that They Don't Care About Us was a song to kind of win those people back over, but I think it's to show them, hey, I might have taken the pigmentation out of my skin because of a skin condition that I cannot control, but I still am paying attention. At the end of the day, Michael Jackson was a black man. He felt the criticism and the problems consistently more than anyone else, and, you know, in the industry at that time anyway. And he made a song to bring awareness to the problems that were happening in the world, with, you know, when it comes to police brutality, racism, hate crimes. It might have been a controversial song, but people talked about it, people listened to it, and the things that he spoke about in that song is still prevalent today. I think back in 2014 or 2015, the Black Lives Matter organization used that song during one of their protests and one of their marches. And so that goes to show that song is 20 years old, 20 plus now, but at that time it was 19, 20 years old. And the fact that they used it shows that it was still prominent. It still makes sense. It still is relevant in at that time, 2014, 2015, and even though this is 2019, which this is 14 years later after the song was originally recorded and released, it's still relevant because we're still going through these problems as far as racism and police brutality and everything else, and we're still seeing hate crimes spiking through the roof, especially since we have this clown in chief president that we have in this country. It's all bad. So the reference track, Michael Jackson's They Don't Care About Us, extremely relevant 24 years later after its release in 1995. So I just wanted to use that. Is it 24? Yeah, it's 24. Sometimes I can't count, y'all. But I'm not a good mather. But I believe it's 24, you know, if I'm counting properly. So back to Bossom Jean, I also want to throw out there, if you're from Dallas and or you're living in Dallas-Fort Worth area, and if the sentencing is not what we are wanting, please, 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 you can protest. You can show your anger and you can show your disdain, but please do it in nonviolent ways. One of the things that is spiking up completely in this country, not just in DFW, but in this country, period, is the amount of emotional outbursts and uprisings, but also murders. I don't want for people to die. I don't want for people to get hurt. I think that we can express ourselves in different ways, and I don't want for us to be so emotional that it gets out of hand. I think that we can show our upset and our disdain without getting physical and without getting violent. So protest, in the best way that you know how, just as long as it doesn't become violent and we don't get physical with people, I think that that's okay. I know a lot of people are just like, well, I have the Malcolm X mentality. You can have the Malcolm X mentality, but I don't think that violence has ever solved a motherfucking thing. So yeah, you can say what you mean what you say, put that shit out there, but I don't want any more people to be hurt. I'm tired of seeing our kids and brothers and sisters and parents and grandparents getting killed because we're emotional and we're in the moment. I want us to kind of think through our emotions and yell to the mountaintop what the fuck you want happen, and yell to the mountaintop how the fuck they fucked up. Yell to the mountaintop on how much that judge was trash for the sentence she chose. Like, do what you feel is necessary without the violence, and I think we'll be fine. Being black, but you know, other than that, being black in America has been tough for years, for centuries. I know a lot of people will say, well, black people owned black people. Yeah, that's fine, that's great. Does it make it excusable for a white person to have owned black people? No, that doesn't make it okay. I hate that excuse, but we've been, you know, black people came over here as slaves from Africa. We were stolen from the motherland from which all humankind was born. We were stolen. We were sold. We were stolen. We were bought. We were put on slave ships, bodies on top of bodies, getting sick, dealing with diseases, being raped, being murdered, being thrown over into the ocean as our final resting place. You know, this is the story of a lot of our ancestors as black people. And not only just dispersed in America, but we were dropped off in Cuba. We were dropped off in Mexico, which was essentially Texas originally. We were dropped off in Puerto Rico. We were dropped off in several different countries, which is why the term Afro-Latina is a thing, which a lot of people don't think that that's real, but, you know, whatever. But, yeah, we were dropped off in several different parts of the world and were brought into those parts as slaves. And that was the beginning of not only just the trauma, but just of it being tough for us as Africans and African Americans or Afro-Cubans or Afro-Puerto Ricans or Afro-Dominican, you know, Afro-Latinx. Like, that was the beginning of things being tough for us. And how we were treated took a toll on us just as a culture. That trauma kind of gets passed down a little bit. You know what I'm saying? And fast forward hundreds of years later, we're still treated like crap. We're just not. We're enslaved in a different way. We're enslaved in terms of the prison system. We are enslaved in terms of how America looks at us in advertisements, how they look at us in movies, how they look at us in plays and literature and so many different things. We're still enslaved in a way, and we're still being treated like shit. And it takes a toll on us, not only just collectively, but individually. Because collectively, we sit here, we watch television, or we're on social media, and something happens and it spreads like wildfire, and we're all discussing it, you know, on Black Twitter using different hashtags. And so we're affected collectively in that way. But we're affected individually by how we feel outside of everyone else's emotions, how it hits hard for us. Or if we had a family member who went through racism and had a hate crime committed on them, or had a family member who was a victim of police brutality, that sits with you individually. We'll sit here and we'll read posts online all the time from friends and strangers about how these situations are taking a toll on them mentally. And I know some people who aren't really understanding will sit and say, well, how does this take a toll on you if you're just reading it on social media? Well, we'll have an episode about that, I think, next week. But social media is where we get our news now, you know, because everything that happens immediately. Everybody has a cell phone. You know, you have news reporters who will utilize the live function on their phone before they can pull up a cameraman to get everything together, because everything is at your fingertips. And you get on Facebook, or you get on Twitter, or you get on Instagram, and you're scrolling, and the racists are in full effect. they have balls on the internet. Never in public, but they definitely have balls on the internet. And you come across them from a hashtag. Or something happens in your hometown. We'll just say something happens in your hometown that was racially motivated against black people and brown people. And you start to find out who your real friends are. Well, not necessarily who your real friends are, but you start to find out people's true colors. Like, there's been, like, with the whole Trayvon Martin thing, I had some people from high school who were white. I went to a mixed school. It was more black people than white people because if you knew Monroe, then you would understand. But these people, I would never guessed in a million years that they would have voted for a Trump with the ideals that he has, or that they would have felt that Trayvon deserved it. Although George Zimmerman, it's documented on tape that he was told not to stalk this kid. He killed him when he felt like his life was in danger because the kid defended himself. You know what I'm saying? And they felt like Trayvon deserved it. Or they sat there and you want us to respect Melania and you want us to respect Donald Trump, but when Barack Obama and Michelle were in office, they were getting all kind of racist jokes. People were hanging up replicas of Obama as a doll being hung from a tree, or posting pictures next to Michelle Obama of a fucking monkey, or calling her a man and all this other kind of shit. I saw that from some people that I never would have guessed in a million years that they were disgusting human beings like that, and that bothered me, and it stressed me out a little bit, because it's like, okay, clearly you're not the person I thought you were, and I would love to have a conversation with you, but who's to say that you're going to be willing to have an intellectual conversation about your racism that you refuse to acknowledge that you have, or your prejudice that you refuse to acknowledge that you have, or your privilege that you refuse to acknowledge that you have, that's different from what I have. Social media can do that. And with this whole black versus white, or Mexican versus white, or whatever, with all of this happening, I know if it affects me negatively to where sometimes I have to put my phone down to keep my mental in check, I know I'm not the only one. Because at the end of the day, no matter how angry we are, no matter how insensitive we try to make ourselves out to be, we're human at the end of the day. We feel, we get emotional, we experience things. And for me, the death of Trayvon Martin and even Tamir Rice, those two situations bothered me and took a toll on me from just reading and watching, you know, court things. And it bothered me because I have nephews. They're not biologically related to me, but I call them my nephews nonetheless. I've known them since they were kids. It's just that their grandfather and my mother didn't work out. But I have nephews who are the perfect, they have the perfect look for what scares racist people. And I want to say racist white people, because I feel like white people invented racism, but I'm just going to say racist people, because you have Mexicans that don't like black people. So it's not just white people, it's others as well. So just people who are racist, period. You look at my nephews and they are the perfect description of what they would think to be deemed as dangerous, to be deemed as murderers, to be deemed as a rapist. They're the perfect look. But they are good kids with great grades, not necessarily the best growing up, you know, in the world or anything like that, but considering the circumstances that they've gone through, they've turned out to be amazing men. And then I have a brother. I have two brothers. I have my oldest brother, Aaron, but I also have my youngest brother, who is 19 years old. He's attending school at Texas Southern University in Houston, Texas, and he is somewhere where he knows nobody that he's not related to, basically. And I fear all the time that something could happen to him. Oh, it's a fear of mine. There's been times where I've literally, like, when he tells me he's going somewhere, I'm like, text me when you get there. Text me when you get home. Call me. You know, let me know that you're safe. And I know I do that. I know my mom does that. I know my sister, like, we all, my uncle does it. Like, we all do it because of the times someone could look at him as a threat when really he is a 3.7 GPA college sophomore getting his degree in music education. He has never been arrested, never stolen anything. Like, he's a great kid, but no one will ever see that simply because of what he looks like. That is my fucking fear. And that's why this us versus them being Black in America episode is so important for me to put out there, because they're not going to see past the physical and see, oh, this is a really great kid, or, oh, he has a really great head on his shoulders, or, oh, his parents would be so proud of him. No. Or his family would be so proud of him. They're not going to look at him as a kid who is doing so many great things in the world. They're just going to look at him as a Black kid who's tall, medium build, a little muscular, and he could potentially kill me, all because he's a Black kid. All because of that. That fucking scares me. You know, and so I can only imagine what it's like for families. I can only imagine what it's like for the parent. You know what I'm saying? As his sister, I freak the fuck out. So I can only imagine how my mom feels. And my mom's a police officer. But that doesn't negate the fact that she's Black and she has a Black son. That doesn't negate any of that. Because when it comes to him, they're not going to say, oh, we're not going to kill you because your mom's a police officer. No, they're still going to hot your ass because you a nigga at the end of the day. They could give a fuck. So the whole back the blue bullshit is only applicable to white police officers. Damn the Black police officers that y'all screaming Black the Blue. Like, you guys are insulting these motherfuckers. You love the police officers so fucking much, as long as they're the white skin tone that you have and in that uniform. But what about the niggas in the uniform that has that on and they love their motherfucking job that they have, but they're conflicted at the same fucking time because they're Black still? Like, I can only imagine the fear that my mom has. True enough, she tries not to live in it because it'll drive you crazy. But I know that fear is there. And so I know if my mom freaks out and she's a police officer and she's been doing this job for 20-something years, I can only imagine what regular civilians go through every day. Because you have to sit at home or sit at work, send your child to school, send your child out to the store, send your child for this, send your child for that. And you literally have to sit back, hope, and motherfucking pray that your child comes home alive and doesn't get attacked by someone who hates them simply because of their skin color, not because of something that they fucking did or said, simply because of their skin tone. You know, true enough, hate and racism can come from all sides, but as of right now, we're just discussing Black and brown people, and those are the people who have suffered the most from the others for years. You know what I'm saying? I know it's different for me to sit here and call people who are not of Black and brown complexions or cultures or backgrounds the others, but that's what we're doing right now, because I refuse to keep allowing Black people to be the others. Now, this is not to say that I want white people to be the others. That's not what I'm saying. But I refuse to let my people continue to be considered the other. You know, I'm not going to consider doing that. So that doesn't mean that there's, like I said, it doesn't mean there's not racism on all sides. There is, you know, for different reasons. Some of them make perfect fucking sense. Some of them are irrational as fuck. But at the end of the day, it's taught. You know what I'm saying? at the end of the day, it's taught. And you have to stop teaching that hate to your kids. You can teach them to be careful. Especially black people, listen to me. You can teach your kids to be careful. You can teach your children to be aware. But I don't think it's okay to teach your children that all white people are bad. I don't think it's okay, because there are white allies out there. You guys are voting so hard for Bernie Sanders, but you're not teaching your kids that all white people are bad. That there are white people out there who are actually allies to black and brown people. Teach your kids that. But also let them know there's a bad apple to every motherfucking bunch. But don't allow it to spoil that bunch for you. I have amazing white friends. Laura, one of the people who helped me out financially, she's a white woman. And I love her to death. Love her to death. I would do anything for her. You know what I'm saying? I have Jamie. She's an amazing friend. Trey, amazing friend. Anthony, he's kind of Mexican. He's like white Mexican, but amazing friend. Ryan, amazing ass friend. Ashley, amazing friend. Like, I have amazing white allies in my life. Jesse, both guy and girl, amazing white allies in my life. Like, don't sit up here and make all white people out to be disgusting. Lindsay, amazing. Victoria, amazing. Like, I have amazing white, so don't teach people that all white people are bad. White people do the same thing. Don't teach your children that all black people are rapists and drug dealers and this and that and the third. Some people are just a product of their fucking environment. They had no choice but to do what they had to do to fucking survive. Like selling weed. But y'all motherfucking asses is making money off this shit now, and we still got people who are sitting in jail for selling weed, for trying to make money to support their family, because they can't help that the way that the system is set up is for them to be poor for their entire lives and not to succeed in life. So stop teaching that. Mexican people, stop teaching that. Puerto Rican people, stop teaching that shit. Like, stop teaching hate. If we were to stop doing that, this world would be so much, like, y'all have no idea. We all like to sit up here, right, and say, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. First of all, I stopped believing in organized religion a long time ago. Does that mean that I don't believe in God? Absolutely not. That's not what that means. I do believe that God or a higher power is out there. I do pray. I do send great vibes out there. But don't sit up here and tell me that you are a Christian and a child of God, but teaching racism to your kids. I know we like to sit up here and let this picture of a white, blonde, blue-eyed Jesus out there, but if you go back and read the same Bible that we all supposedly have read and have a copy of, and read the description of what Jesus looked like, there's no way that that's what the Lord looked like, and that Jesus don't look like that. Not in no hot ass Africa, you don't. No, you don't. Y'all ain't finna keep lying to me. Not finna do it. Absolutely not. Do I believe that Jesus is real? Do I believe the Lord is? Yes, I do. I'm a firm believer in a higher power. But do I rock an organized religion? I do not. Because I can't deal with hypocrisy, and I will live my life the way that I see fit. And my relationship with God will be just that, mine. And it has worked out tremendously for me ever since. Because I can't sit. This hasn't happened at any of my home churches back in Louisiana. So let me throw a disclaimer out there. But I have sat in a church here since I've been in Dallas-Fort Worth. And have watched a pastor preach the word and talk about his hate for black people at the same time. I had a friend, she and I are no longer friends, wish her the best though. I had a friend whose parents were avid churchgoers, could quote the Bible like that, but hated the thought of black people procreating with their kids, or hated the thought that their daughter and son dated black people. Hated it. That's not love. If God is all about love, then why are you spreading hate? That don't make sense. That, you giving me 2 + 2, but I ain't getting 4. I'm getting like 15. That shit don't make no sense to me. So stop teaching that. That shit is taught. You know what I'm saying? Love is the only thing that we're really born with in our hearts. That's all we know. Hate comes in because we're taught that. Nelson Mandela said that, and I'm just paraphrasing. I ain't no philosopher or nothing, but that, I mean, he said that. So what mental health gets affected by the issues that we see against Black and brown people, their stress, their anxiety. It can make you depressed if it hits close to home, or can trigger PTSD for those who are personally affected by the racism, you know, meaning you went through it personally, or you had a family member that was killed because of racism or police brutality or a hate crime was committed, you know, and you were personally affected by that. True enough, we can all feel and sympathize and be empathetic and can feel the pain because we're Black and because we're brown, but it's different when you personally go through it and it affects you 100% personally. And America's silence towards it is not helping. You know, America needs to step up and have a leader to say, hey, this shit is wrong. And I know that we want that from Bernie, but we really need that. And two, it almost makes you not want to raise kids in this environment, you know? It almost makes you not want to have that, have those kids in this environment, because you don't want them to have to suffer. I don't want to raise kids in this environment. As far as a conversation with my girlfriend, we talk about it all the time, and we also are a little hesitant because do we really want to have our kids in this world? Well, yeah, we do. But what about homeschool? Well, you don't want to take your kids out of the ability to have a social life. So these are conversations that we're having now, and it's scary, but they're necessary conversations. And so, you know, we just have to stop teaching hate to our kids. We have to try to do things and lead our lives in love. Like I say, I know there's people out there that are Malcolm X and some people that are Martin Luther King, or some people who are T'Challa and some people who are Eric Killmonger. Both messages are right. Both energies are 100% understood. I just don't want the violence. Like I said earlier, I don't want violence to be perpetuated and to be made okay, because that doesn't help the problem. That just makes the problem worse. Sometimes you have to get off social media to get your mind right. Because people are big, bad, and bold on the internet and could call you a nigger in the comment section, and then you up here huffing and puffing and mad, about to have a heart attack because you're that mad. So remove yourself from the internet. Kind of give yourself a breather, and kind of just live life and just take a break, you know. Take a break from watching the news. I know it's important for us to watch news because that's how we keep in, you know, updated on what's going on in the world, but sometimes you have to do that to take care of yourself. And I just need for everyone to understand that Black and brown people aren't lower than animals. We're human beings. We have emotions. We go through things. And just like you guys have bad apples in your bunches, so do we. So that is all for this week. I know it's a little winded, but it's been a minute. I do want to let you guys know that I finally have social media accounts set up for the podcast. You guys have the Facebook page, but I also have an Instagram page. It's called PMM Podcast on Instagram, and on Twitter is PMM_podcast. So follow those two pages. I'm going to put the social media links on Facebook. I appreciate you guys so much. Next week, we're going to have an episode dedicated solely to social media. We delved into it a little bit today, but by a different topic. But we're going to talk about how social media can affect our mental health. And I know a lot of people are probably sitting there thinking, that don't make sense. How can it affect our mental health? I will let you know next week as to how it can affect our mental health. So thank you guys so much. I appreciate y'all. This is Jackie, aka Jake Savage, signing off. Have a great night, y'all.